Welcome to the Contracting Officer Podcast. It's not just for contracting officers. If you work anywhere in the government acquisition world, this podcast is for you. Whether you work for government or industry, we're here to help you understand just a little more about how the other side thinks. This episode is brought to you by Skyway Acquisition. Skyway's team of former contracting officers gives you context in the government market, so you're more prepared, more competitive, and more effective. Go to skywayacq.com to learn more. Today, we're talking about how contracts are terminated in the government world. Let's get started. You know, pretty much every contract has some type of termination clause in it, some kind of language if you want to get out of the contract on either side, what happens. The unique thing about the government world is that the customer, the government, has the power instead of the seller. So unlike when you go like to lease a car, where you, it's not even worth reading the whole contract because you can't get out of it anyway. The company has the seller has all the power. You're the customer. An individual customer doesn't have much power in your personal life, but the government is such a huge customer that they get to set their own terms for terminating a contract.
Yeah, and terminations aren't common in government contracts, but they're common enough that they actually have their own acronyms like T for C and T for D. And they even have their own FAR part, FAR part 49.
Yeah, this stuff is so messy, it can be so messy, that a whole part of the FAR is dedicated to terminations. All right, so before we get started, let's say thanks.
I want to say thanks for a 5-star iTunes review from Abe Henry. And his review says, "This podcast is extremely informative and comprehensive. I highly recommend it to all contracts and compliance managers."
Nice. Thanks, Abe.
So you were saying that the buyer has the more power in the terminating of the contract in the government market.
Yeah, this is something you're not used to in your personal life. Let me define the acronyms you introduced before I get into that. So termination for convenience is usually pronounced T4C because that's a lot easier to say. Termination for default is T4D, and no one wants to say all those words. We use the nice little acronyms, but the key is one is for convenience and one is for default, and it is exactly what it sounds like. Let me read you the FAR clause, just a little of it, for termination for convenience. It's FAR 52249-1, and it says, "The contracting officer, by written notice, may terminate this contract in whole or in part when it is in the government's interest. If this contract is terminated, the rights, duties, and obligations of the parties, including compensation to the contractor, shall be in accordance with FAR Part 49. So the important thing to point out there is it says when it is in the government's interest. So this is the customer saying, if I don't want this anymore, I can stop for any reason at all.
And if you don't like that, don't be a government contractor.
Wow.
That's kind of what it says. And that's a lot of power.
All right. So FAR Part 49 is very detailed. We're just skimming the surface here. There's way too much to go into in a podcast, but FAR 49 covers the policies and procedures relating to complete or partial termination of contracts for convenience of the government or for default. And let me just, at a very top level, which part of 49 does what? So first, let me say FAR Part 49 for terminations does not apply to commercial item contracts using FAR Part 12. So if you're using FAR Part 12, different rules. Let me chunk out what the rest of 49 talks about. 49.1 talks about the authority and responsibility of contracting officers, the duties of the contractor and the CO after a notice of termination has been issued, and then also settlement procedures and agreements. 49.2 and .3 talk about T4C and those settlements in detail, and 49.4 is termination for default. T for D-land.
Yeah, you don't want to be there. You really don't want to have to be flipping to 49.4 if you can help it.
So for today, we're really only going to cover 49.1. We're going to give an overview of what's going on. We're not going to get into the details of any of the other parts. Maybe those will be later episodes. 49.101 gives the contracting officer the authority to terminate contracts, T for D, T for C, or to negotiate a settlement. But despite the fact that there's a whole FAR part about terminations and all the details about how to terminate for convenience or default, 49.101B says the contracting officer shall terminate contracts only when it is in the government's interest. And here's the good part. The CO shall use a no-cost settlement instead of issuing a termination notice when it's known that the contractor will accept one, when there's no government furnished property, and when there's no outstanding payments, debts, or other obligations out there.
In other words, do a no-cost settlement and just walk away. Really don't terminate unless you have to. And this is similar to the episode that we did about certified cost and pricing data. Is it only do this if you have to? So they leave all these little steps in the way to say, try this, then try this, then try this, then try this. And then if they, oh, that doesn't work. Okay, then fine, terminate. But that's kind of the flow here.
Yeah, if you can talk to the contractor and say, look, this is probably not going to go well. We're going to stop this contract one way or another. Do you want to terminate or do you want to negotiate a settlement where we just kind of stop? That is the best case scenario and you're done. The FAR also points out that if the price of the undelivered balance of the contract is less than $5,000, you shouldn't really terminate it. Just let it run to completion. Be done with it.
Yeah, just walk away. And another interesting fact here is after the CO issues a termination, then someone needs to be assigned as the terminating contracting officer. And that's an official title, but it's probably a title that the PCO, the contracting officer who manages the contract, automatically just picks up.
Yeah, you may be knighted, dun, 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 you are TCO. But in massive terminations, if this is a gigantic contract, there may be a professional termination contracting officer that's what they do. That runs this and takes it out of the acquiring office's hands.
Yeah, and this is a really good version of getting the reps in. This is something that I think I did maybe 3 times.
Yeah, there's not a lot of people with a lot of reps in terminations.
Exactly.
Thankfully.
Yeah, that's actually a good thing. But yeah, it's a niche inside a niche. So TCO is not something that most people have on their resume.
Okay, let's move on. Talk about how this is done. The contracting officer can only terminate a contract in writing. They can't just make a phone call there, right? And that when they send this written notification, they have to say whether it's terminated for convenience or default. They have to say when it's terminated and the extent of the termination. Is the whole contract terminated or maybe just part of it? But it's gotta be clear. It's the opening of the negotiation for terminations.
And a fun fact here is that I'll give you the FAR reference. 49107 says that the terminating contracting officer has to have an audit done when the value of the prime or subcontract is over $100,000. So of all the other stuff going on, if it's over $100,000, the termination process says you got to get the cost audited. So you wonder why things take longer. There's an example. Another fun fact, and again, 49108B, if you're curious.
Look at you with all the FAR stuff today.
I'm fancy today. And what 49108B says is that even if this is not included in the subcontracts that you have, it still applies. At the end of the day, the government has the right to terminate contracts, period.
Yeah, even if it's not flowed down properly to the subcontractors, government still gets to do it. Yeah,
so if you're a sub, heads up. This might impact you.
So when are we talking about in the time zones here? This isn't acquisition time zone stuff. This is in the execution time zones. And it's really any time during performance of the contract, but it's very unlikely that something would be terminated at the very end. It's probably sometime during the performance zone. Worst case, though, it could happen right at the beginning of the execution time zones in the honeymoon zone. It's not much of a honeymoon if you show up for the kickoff and they say, oh yeah, we forgot to tell you, we didn't get all the money that we thought we were going to have, so we're going to terminate part of this contract right now.
Yeah, and that's actually one of the ones that I went through, is that when we were literally at the kickoff meeting starting the negotiation to de-scope the contract. Didn't call it a partial termination. That's really what it was, right? So there's nuance to this, but yeah, this is an execution zone story for sure.
All right, let's talk about why this is so important. I'll try to give some examples to bring this into your own life. So commercial contracts generally have conditions for termination. So think about your cell phone contract. Have you ever looked at the terms to get out of your cell phone contract if you want to switch to another carrier? The termination fee, it's pretty much what the rest of the contract would cost you if you didn't terminate. So what it says is you can get out of this contract anytime you want by paying us the entire contract price, at which point we'll stop giving you any service.
It sounds like a deal.
Yeah, perfect. But it's because you as the customer, you don't have any power. The phone companies have the power there, right? You as an individual customer have no power at all. If you were a big company negotiating a contract for 1,000 phones, maybe you have a little more power, maybe not. But when you're dealing with the government, the government is that customer. They actually have the power to set the terms for termination.
Yeah, and this is an interesting conversation because there are multiple layers to it, like the risk management that's going on the company side versus the government side. The government can't actually spend money it doesn't have, so it needs the ability to say, look, I didn't get funding for this from Congress, so I literally legally can't.
I can't go on.
So I have to be able to say, oh, sorry. So, I mean, there's it's more complex than that. But yeah, the cell phone example is makes it crystal clear.
Right. So unlike in the cell phone example where the seller has the power to say, you owe us everything if you want to get out of this, the government is kind of a nice customer. So they might terminate you, but the terms of these clauses we're talking about actually say that the government has to pay you, as the contractor, has to pay you some or all of the costs resulting from the termination. So if you've bought parts that are not going to be used, you could potentially be paid for the cost of those parts that are just kind of wasted now. If you have severance pay for employees, if you have to unfortunately lay employees off because of the termination, those severance costs may be allowable costs that you get paid. So it's not a horrible deal. It's not as bad. They could be really awful with termination and say we can just stop anytime and you get nothing, contractors. But it's not that bad. So aside from the potential work, the work that you've lost or that you're not going to get to do, you know, arguably the contractors come out whole, and I've got gigantic air quotes on either side of whole there, but contractors should come out whole at the end of a termination.
And keep in mind, this is not a happy time for either side, but you got to treat it professionally. And this is going to happen. You know, it's business. And, you know, I've been involved in the ones that didn't go well and ones that were, you know what, we lost the funding. And so understand this is important to talk about because having an awareness of how it should be managed is focused on communication.
Yeah, you're going to have lots of people involved in a termination. There's pricing, cost estimating, there's accounting, there's lawyers, of course, right? That I've been involved in terminations that immediately went to lawyer land, and those are the ones that generally go badly. Sorry, lawyer friends.
Take longer.
But as soon as you start talking only through lawyers, I mean, this is a legal thing, this termination, so it's important that everything is documented. But as soon as you start talking just in legal terms, I think the communications get locked to a point where it makes it harder to get anything done. I've also been involved in terminations, actually a really, really, really large termination, where it was very constructive. The government and the contractor both accepted reality that this program was just not going to continue, and they worked together. We worked together to get to a reasonable settlement, which, you know, it's actually an absurd amount of money that the government paid out to stop doing this contract, but it was less than they would have paid to continue to deliver the thing. But I'm not saying that it was easy. I'm not saying it wasn't super contentious at times, at back and forth, but it was professional. And at the end, I think both sides said, yeah, that was a fair deal for ending this contract.
Yeah, and so the key point here is that unlike the cell phone contract where you as a consumer may end up feeling like you're getting kind of beat up.
Beat up, that's a nice way to say it.
The other, on this side, the government is trying to just protect themselves, but they are required to not screw you over.
Completely.
Now and it's going to feel like, yeah, well, you're not keeping the work, but it's important to understand both sides have some stake in the game. And the biggest thing here is that it's a frustrating exercise because the customer, the person that the contractor and the contracting officer and the whole program team are trying to support, the user that needs the whatever is being terminated, this is kind of like an overhead exercise. It's not creating value for anybody, and that can make it contentious and frustrating because people see it as an other duty as assigned, and they're like, oh, just get the termination done. And just like that, you've created – and I say this from experience because the program guy didn't want to come to the meetings to terminate the contract because it wasn't value-added for his future.
I love how you just said that overhead is non-value-added.
it's non-value-added for the customer. I mean, think about it. The customer doesn't care about
– No, I know what you mean. It's just funny.
But yeah, you're right. I want to point out the fact that this is a team effort, and the team needs to understand that walking away from this contract is not just flip the switch. You've got to do it properly, or you create landmines later. Or to your point, you end up with a whole lot of attorneys, and it just takes longer and costs more.
A lot of people that were working it before are going to need to be involved in to some extent to recreate the past or remember the past, but they probably don't want to be. They probably want to move on to other things. And time-wise, you know, terminations take time. There are very large government programs that have been terminated that the termination lasted longer than the contract did, just to get it all wrapped up. So we've been going back and forth a lot. Let's talk a little specifically from the government side. The government needs to be able to terminate the contract. Why would they need to terminate a contract, Kevin?
Well, the biggest reason is they don't have the money. If I can't pay the bill, I can't have the contract. So it could be a fiscal reason, but it could be something more. They just don't need it. Like they've aged out of it, or the building that you're maintaining is no longer there, or something like that. The T for D side is that the contractor's not performing well.
Yeah.
And that T for D is a four-letter. It's a four-letter word.
I mean, that's three letters long.
Well, you mentioned that, and I say that because I put it in an email once, and you know, it's like that phrase went viral.
Oh, that's calling your mom ugly, man. That's not good.
Even the program team is like, well, we can't say that. and another reason it may happen is that it's a resource allocation exercise where the program office or the customer has, like, you know, say that, make the numbers easy. They have $1 million. And they have $1.5 million worth of contracts, but they want some of all of the stuff on there. Well, in those three contracts, you can't afford all three of them. You've got to terminate them to some extent. So my customer may tell me, I've only got $500,000 to put on this contract, even though it's supposed to have $1 million of funding.
And why would they end up with $1.5 million worth of contracts and they only have $1 million? You can't really enter into contracts for money you don't have. But if you have cost type contracts and one is overrunning, suddenly you may need more money than you've had appropriated, and that's where these decisions come in. And there's been a lot of contracts that have been terminated because the contractor is overrun and there is no money to complete the job. It's important not to take this lightly. The decision to terminate, it shouldn't be a snap decision by the government or a surprise to the contractor. The contractor hears about it should not be when they get a letter that says, you're terminated.
It's crazy to find in your email box.
If you're on the government side, if you're considering a termination, before you even get close to considering a termination, you should have your lawyer involved. For the government to come out of a termination cleanly, they have to follow all the steps that are spelled out by the FAR. We already talked about termination is the end of the process. There's lots of communication that needs to happen first. And the way it goes is first the government sends a letter of concern that says, we are concerned, contractor, that your performance is not meeting the contract requirements, something like that. There's another step that is a show cause letter, and this says, hey, contractor, you need to show us, government, why we shouldn't terminate right here.
And there's another one called a cure notice that says, you need to fix this or we're going to terminate you. So there's all kinds of stuff along this process.
Yeah, you have until now to do this or you're done, right? Well, you have 30 days, maybe not now. That's a little harsh. You don't have a chance to cure it. What I'm trying to say is there are lots of formal steps aside from just basic human communication about these things. There's lots of formal steps that should be taken before you get to a termination.
And from the government perspective, don't assume the contractor knows how to manage this process. Let's hope that most contractors don't have a lot of experience getting terminated, right? It's not something that they deal with all
the
time.
Put that on your resume.
Yeah, exactly.
Experience in being terminated.
Yeah. The good news is that the termination clause kind of lays out how the steps work. And so, again, we're hitting, I mean, the wave tops of that. The bad news is, as we've talked about, it takes a while. It's not something you do lightly. Whether it's T for C or T for D, there's a time investment here.
I got to go back to the experience at terminations. If all of your past performance citations in a source selection are spelling out, government, we know how to get terminated. You should award to us, because if you have to terminate it, we're really good at it.
I could spin that in a proposal for research and development on, like, you know, the really high end of, I wonder if this will work, but anyway. That's funny. All right.
Industry side. T for C can be damaging. It of course, cash flow, revenue, take a big hit. It can hurt your pipeline. It can hurt your future work as well, because terminations of any type take lots of work and they're a huge distraction. And while you're distracted, you are not working on the things that grow your business. You're not working on completing the other contracts that you have, right? You get sucked into these termination things.
Yeah. And that goes back to that idea of, you know, the customer doesn't care about the overhead stuff that doesn't bring them value.
Right.
Here's an example of the the contractor is spending potentially a lot of money and a lot of time closing this out when it's not going to generate future business. Yeah.
And they're especially not sympathetic if you're terminated by one agency, but you have a contract with another one that needs to be completed. They don't care that you're distracted by the other agency.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, so T for C is one thing. T for D, the default, is the bad thing. That's where you get the black eye. It's a huge deal. This is where you have to disclose this kind of thing. It's basically like filing bankruptcy. It stays on your record for a long time. And if the government sees that, it can impact your ability to win new contracts, just like filing bankruptcy can impact your ability to get credit.
It's not a common occurrence for a T for D because it's of all those things you just described. But the government's really got to be offended to go through the process to do a T for D.
Yeah. A lot of times they're mad at first and they say, we are considering termination for default. And then after lots of negotiations, the contract is terminated for convenience. You might start that way, but it's really rare. And the government has to be really, really upset to do a T for D.
And a negotiated settlement is always going to be a better solution than T for C or T for D or any of that stuff. And so the idea of communicating, negotiating a solution, how do we get from an unhappy place to a happy place as a team of industry and government? That's a whole other podcast topic, but it's important to point out. This is a great time to understand where all that communication you spent the last maybe year or two or of the performance zone getting to this point, now that you have a relationship so you can manage this termination process and maybe not even get to that. Just do a settlement and say, okay, let's just not exercise the option and walk away friends.
Right. Like I was saying, sometimes the government starts out saying terminate for default. You end up negotiating a termination for convenience. Sometimes the government says we want to terminate for convenience, but they can do that without actually calling it a termination for convenience. They might just not exercise the next option on your contract, which is their right to do. And that's it. You know, in reality, that's a termination. You're done. Contract is over. But it doesn't require anything other than the government not exercising the option. And, you know, really, think about this from the industry side. If the government wants to stop working on your contract, do you want your past performance to say that the option wasn't exercised, or do you want it to say that you were terminated? Because even termination for convenience, you might explain yourself, but it still has the word termination in it, and that never sounds good. This is glaringly obvious, but the simple way to avoid terminations, industry, is make sure you understand the contract requirements. Make sure you understand what you're signing up to before you sign that contract, and then deliver what you promised to deliver. If you do that, the only reason that you would get terminated is if it's something completely out of your control, like the government money stuff that you were talking about before, Kevin.
And that's a great place to wrap it up, Paul. So the points that I would highlight from this is T for C, it's more common than T for D. Neither of them is very common anyway, but you're more likely going to have T for C. If you get a T for D, if even that acronym shows up in an email or in a discussion, something is really inherently wrong.
Yeah.
And beware that T for C, when funding starts drying up, if you start learning about, hey, we may not be able to exercise the option, or you start hearing about, hey, we're having trouble finding funding for this year, or if you're just paying attention and talking to your customers and they're going to have funding issues next year, that's an indicator. Also, if it's a research and development contract and it's not delivering, that's an indicator. And the last thing is it's good to be king. The government's the world's biggest buyer, so they're able to set these contracts up to give them an out.
Yeah, there's not a lot of other places that as the buyer, you can say, here are the terms by which I can walk away from this deal.
Yes, I want to put that in my cell phone contract.
And I want to go back to saying that terminations are the last resort. If the government needs to end a contract, a formal termination, it's the last thing that should happen. There's lots of communication that needs to occur before you get to that point, because terminations are usually very costly and very time consuming for both sides. So government and industry, you should really expend every effort to negotiate a settlement before you get to the termination point. Okay, I think that's it for today. Talk to you later.
See you, Paul.
Okay, that's it for this episode of the Contracting Officer Podcast. Thanks again to our sponsor, Skyway Acquisition. If you need government contract training, specialized consulting support, or just want to get the contracting officer's viewpoint, Skyway does all three. Go to skywaymember.com and click on the Let's Talk button to see if Skyway is the right solution to you. Remember, send your topic ideas to me at paul@contractingofficerpodcast.com. And thanks for joining us.